At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Al-Khatib.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on our first quarter 2013 conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of Alliance Grain Traders, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaytan Borasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started with some comments, I'd like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'll turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Thanks, Omar, and thank you all for joining us on our conference call this afternoon. Market normalization that we've been forecasting throughout the 2012 year and now in 2013 appears to be picking up its pace based on export statistics from a number of the origins and geographies that AGT is active in. In fact, a number of the conditions we had earlier indicated as requirements for normalization in pulse markets that would aid in the normalization of our business are appearing in the market presently. Most significantly in the current market are the estimates surrounding production shortfalls in India, which some sources indicate may result in a significant level of pulse imports to India and the Indian subcontinent markets. These estimates particularly impact AGT in that current harvest volumes are important for India and Indian subcontinent red lentil supplies, a core consumption item for that region. We have targeted further meaningful improvement of our overall annual utilization in the second half of 2013 as we expect traditional supply and demand periods to show a return to business seasonality that we've seen in past years. The shortfalls in local production in India and key pulse regions may have a widespread impact not only on red lentil markets, but also pulse markets globally. The conditions may represent a demand catalyst that we expect may continue through the second half of the year. For AGT, the significance of recovery of lentil markets is in margin improvement potential, as well as the boosting of utilization for Canada and Turkey, two of our largest platforms of processing. Canada in particular is a key supplier of red lentils to this market, with carry-in stocks from lower export levels in the past periods. India is a large part of the global pulses sector, and imports to this region can assist to drive market prices and volumes to other regions and other origins as well. As pulse demand improves, and with them our utilization improves, the greatest impact can be seen with respect to our earnings due to the high fixed cost nature of our business. These conditions may reverse the underutilization of our assets or the change in product mix we saw in 2012, as a temporary impairment of lentil demand led to lower exports and certainly led to earnings compression we did report in past periods. With the late start to spring this year in Canada and in North America, many statistical outlets are estimating rationalization of acres and possible delays in seeding in Canada and the U.S. Weather conditions have improved over the past few weeks in May, which has actually allowed for the gradual progression of seeding activities in North America. Today is 27 degrees Celsius in Regina. However, rationalization of acres based on seeding intentions of farmers is being reported by some sources and may result in lower production estimates in Canada and the U.S. for the 2013 season in North America. This may provide a positive with respect to rebalancing supply and exports, which have been misaligned recently. Lower supply, decreases in carry-in stocks, and increased import demand may have the result of correcting global pulse prices as well as providing positive impact on our earnings. With the better weather in May, later seeding may favor a switch of some acres to pulses that were intended for oil seeds. Farmers are typically still evaluating seeding options and traditionally continue to do so until they're right in the middle of seeding in May and possibly into early June. This may lead to a reduction in the magnitude of rationalization in Western Canada. Our expectation is that import demand may increase in core consumption regions. With lower supply from production, We expect to see decreases in carry-in to support export activities. This may also have the result of correcting global supplies as well as prices, and giving that impact on our earnings that we mentioned earlier. Of course, we continue to always mention credit liquidity constraints, local currency volatility, but these factors seem to be becoming more predictable, and the effects of these seem to be dissipating. This is estimated to assist in this normalization, giving local importers more access to credit and more stability in currency to commence larger scale replenishment programs we've expected to fill estimated lower depleted low market stocks. Overall, signals are pointing to a continuation of the more upbeat tone in the global pulse of staple foods and ingredient markets that we expect will continue through the first half of 2012 and gain speed in the North American grain harvest in August, September, and beyond. With these positive signals in the markets, we're happy to report positive results in the first quarter of 2013. I would like to ask our CFO, Lori Ireland, to comment on our first quarter results. Lori?
Thanks, Brad. Hello, the first quarter ended March 31st, 2013, showed a fairly large increase in invoice tons, both in the pulses and grain processing and in the supply chain management and distribution segments when compared to the same quarter last year. We also saw the gross profit, adjusted gross profit, and EBITDA per ton increase significantly from the same period last year, from $51.36, $61.24, and $22.34 per metric ton in quarter one of 2012 to $62.45, $71.05, and $38.17 in the quarter one of 2013. The first quarter is typically a quarter of ramp-up and high working capital usage. This is demonstrated by the net debt increase from December 31, 2012 to March 31, 2013. The increase is due to increased accounts receivables as well as inventory and a decrease in accounts payable. In addition, approximately $8.3 million was spent on property, plant, and equipment, which was mainly related to the construction of the Minot facility. We are pleased to report, though, that net working capital increased from 283.6 at March 31st, 2013, compared to $66.6 million at December 31st, 2012. This is due to the restructuring of our operating lines to longer-term facilities. It's provided not only an improvement in working capital for AGT, but also has provided balance sheet certainty for us. Although accounts receivable and inventory have increased in absolute value when compared to the December 31, 2012 quarter-end number, the days outstanding have decreased when compared to both the annualized December 31, 2012 results and when compared to the first quarter of 2012. Inventory days outstanding decreased to 68 days for the quarter-ended March 31, 2013, as compared to 86 days for both the quarter-ended March 31, 2012, and for the year-ended December 31, 2012. Accounts receivable days outstanding decreased to 61 days for the quarter-ended March 31, 2013, as compared to 77 days for the quarter-ended March 31, 2012, and compared to 76 days for the year-ended December 31, 2012. EBITDA showed an improvement from $6.1 million for the quarter ended March 31, 2012 from $12.5 million for the quarter ended December 31, 2012 up to $13.6 million for the quarter ended March 31, 2013. One-time costs include costs incurred during the quarter relating to certain financing and legal expenses, costs relating to the 2012 train derailment in Australia, and establishment of the food ingredient platform. General and administration costs for the quarter ended March 31, 2013 were fairly consistent with the quarter ended December 31, 2012 and include approximately $600,000 of one-time costs as discussed above. General and administration costs were higher than the quarter ended March 31, 2012 due to AGT's larger global operations, including growth in Australia, South Africa, China, India, and the North American food ingredient platform. Marketing, sales, and distribution costs for the quarter ended March 31, 2013 were also fairly consistent with the quarter ended December 31, 2012 and were lower than the quarter ended March 31, 2012 due to continued efforts at reducing discretionary costs. Finance expense of $5.8 million was an increase over the same quarter last year as well as an increase over the quarter ended December 31, 2012 due to increased utilization of operating credits as well as approximately $500,000 in prepayment and interest rate penalties associated with the payout of debt following the new syndicate and second lien notes. Income tax for the quarter ended March 31, 2013 was a recovery of $1.2 million due to the utilization of tax losses in various tax jurisdictions. AGT estimates that the overall corporate tax rate is in the range of 26 to 26.5%, depending on the jurisdiction of earnings or losses each period. Non-cash foreign exchange for the quarter ended March 31, 2013 was an expense of $4.9 million and was largely due to mark-to-market adjustments on derivative contracts. As reported last quarter, AGT has now finalized new banking facilities, including a $270 million senior secured facility with a $30 million accordion, as well as an offering of senior secured second lien notes due in 5 years with gross proceeds of $124.4 million. In addition to general corporate purposes, the proceeds of the notes have been used towards the retirement of high-risk operating credits and has allowed AGT to de-risk our balance sheet by replacing short-term foreign subsidiary credits with a 5-year facility and ensuring more interest rate certainty on our emerging markets operating credits, which have illustrated volatility in the past quarters. AGT has also finalized an accounts receivable factoring agreement for certain foreign subsidiary accounts. AGT and its subsidiaries are in compliance with covenants as of March 31, 2013. And finally, we reported a dividend paid in January of 2013 of 15 cents per share or 60 cents annualized. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. A number of other initiatives are contributing to our optimism of positive developments in our business. Earlier in the year, as Lori mentioned, we had announced our new credit facilities. We feel this is a critical competitive advantage for AGT as markets normalize and we begin to achieve more traditional volumes in our business. Our ability to execute our sales and expansion strategy has always been a critical component to the strength of our company. And the availability of the correct debt instruments to fund our growth, in particular in emerging markets, will continue to build this competitive advantage. With certainty on our balance sheet, we feel that's very positive. The initiatives we've undertaken with regard to efficiency and cost reduction, working capital management, and product diversification continue to progress. We expect they will provide positive results in our business, and we've reported success in this area as evidenced by the dramatic improvement in our inventory and receivable turn metrics reported in this period as compared to 2012. Decreases in our costs along with increases in our utilization will certainly impact significantly our earnings in a positive way. Our core pulses business is returning to more normal as we are continually working towards diversification of that segment to reduce the reliance we have on global lentils. As I mentioned earlier, lentil exports appear to be increasing, which will have a positive effect on our business. However, as a management group, we're committed to insulate our company as much as possible from fluctuations in the global markets in the future. An added focus on chickpeas, beans, and other products we have not handled or focused on as much are being pursued. This includes boosting efforts in new products such as cereal grains, oil seeds, flax seeds, canary seeds in many of our jurisdictions as well. We have a renewed merchandising and distribution activity in non-traditional or secondary markets to create sales opportunities, such as a continued focus on developing opportunities in Latin America. Finally, we continue to grow our packaged foods business, such as Arbella Pasta and our Bulgur and Rice Products Group. We expect that these initiatives will certainly continue to be a component of our growth plans. Another component, a very key component to our diversification endeavor, is our new pulse ingredient platform focused on flours, proteins, starches, and fibers. We expect this platform to provide new margin opportunities with our new plant in Minot, North Dakota, where construction was material complete at the end of quarter one, and we've started with commissioning activities in quarter two. Completion of these commissioning activities to ramp up to production is targeted for completion late in this quarter of quarter two. And this is in time for the commencement of shipments through our exclusive marketing agreement with Cargill, as well as opportunities through our own marketing endeavors to food and feed companies globally. These products are attractive to food and feed companies producing branded products for retail and food service sale, as well as pet food, branded animal feed products to consumers around the globe, demanding a high protein, high fiber, non-GMO vegetable source of ingredients. We forecast these opportunities may be significant, and we feel as a company we've taken the correct steps to set up and implement this business unit. Our agreement with Cargill, the multi-year exclusive supply and marketing agreement for North America Pulse Proteins, demonstrates recognition by major ingredient and food companies that pulses and ingredients can provide nutritional benefits, cost savings, and product advantages to food, branded feed, and pet food suppliers. Food and pet food markets are looking for new protein sources and are attempting to solve emerging allergen issues such as corn, soy, wheat, and egg allergies. Pulse proteins, starches, and fibers are showing great promise as an ingredient line that may provide solutions for our clients. This is certainly a position we've held for a long time. Positive feedback regarding the Pulse ingredient platform we have introduced is leading our management group to investigate opportunities for future conversion of some of our underutilized Canadian facilities to Pulse ingredient production, as well as the addition of ingredient production in Turkey to complement our U.S. facility and plant Chinese plants. This platform, we expect, may create opportunities for the growing demand for these non-GMO and gluten-free pulses and ingredients and provide significant margin potential as well. We're entering the seasonally quiet period in the second quarter where pulse markets reset with India and Turkey harvest and North American seeding. However, we remain positive regarding the balance of 2013 and 2014. With markets returning to normalized flow of products, potential for a return to traditional margins and earnings, we anticipate these to materialize slowly as we move through the end of this year. By focusing on the core competency and strength of our business, including the strength and experience of our management team, the geographic diversification of our assets, our global reach for sales and distribution to virtually all pulse consumption markets around the globe, a clearly defined and executed risk management program, and adequate access to capital in a capital-constrained global market, these are all particular elements of a success strategy. We continue to be optimistic about our ability to normalize our business and deliver long-term value and cash flow and earnings to our shareholders. I thank you for your interest in AGT, and Omar will open it up for a brief Q&A.
Operator, we'll take the first question.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. In order to accommodate as many callers as possible, one question from each person will be taken. To ask a supplemental question, please press star and one again to rejoin the question queue. If time does not allow for response to all the questions, the Alliance Grain Traders Investor Relations Group will follow up after the call. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Murad, with respect to your pulse protein ingredient business here, I was just hoping that you could, one, give us some sort of maybe anecdotal or quantitative account of how well these initial marketing efforts are going by Cargill. You certainly seem to suggest they're going well, but just trying to get some sort of sense as to how much they seem to be able to sell going forward from your plant's perspective. And two, just give a sense for your conviction towards these conversion opportunities that you're speaking to.
Well, I think, Steve, as everybody says, with regards to AGT, I mean, the proof will be in the results that we generate and report. You know, we are planning as we ramp up, the end of this quarter will be, substantially complete our commissioning. And so we expect that later on this year, probably into quarter three, we'll potentially look at a new reporting segment to be able to give you the ability to track the results of this as it starts to ramp out. You know, we're very positive on the, initial feedback in terms of the pilot and the test loads of product that have went out of our Williston, North Dakota factory. So we have a pilot line producing flours and fibers currently. And, the laboratory that we built in Saskatoon that's working on ingredient and product development, which is, fully commissioned end of last year, with a group of scientists working collaboratively with both pet food, branded feed ingredient, and food companies. We're very encouraged by, the results of not only the Cargill agreement, but the other initiatives that we have into the food and the feed sector, the starch and fiber side. So, the foreshadowing in this is our comments regarding, we have started to look at, the potential of conversion of other facilities. We need to bring Minot onto stream. We have the capability to triple the production of that facility with a limited capital expenditure. Because when you build a factory like this, Steve, you build the infrastructure, meaning all the storage, receiving, you know, primary processing, you know, peeling and splitting, flour milling. Then you just have to do the, you know, large-scale fractionization, which we can add capacity for. So our focus right now is ramp up of Minot facility to full utilization, you know, in a quicker fashion as we can, and then start to look at additional incremental production in Canada and Turkey. Our conviction remains, you know, very strong in this area, and it's not just our view. I mean, you know, the Cargill agreement really, you know, kind of provided verification that this isn't just, you know, Murad, Gaetan, Lori's, you know, view that this is a great opportunity. You know, what's driving it is multiple factors. Protein demand, you know, it's there, but really what's driving this more, and as we get more into it, it's this desire for protein that is in a different allergenicity than soy and eggs and corn and wheat. And we see that as a real, you know, good opportunity. But also, surprisingly, we're seeing a lot of opportunities in using pulses in complementary fashion. You know, I like to tell people that, you know, delve into this area, that cereal grains and pulses together actually give you a complete protein. So the cereal protein has one amino acid profile, the pulse protein has another, and together they're complete. So, you know, that's one of the other areas that we're seeing strong interest from the food industry. So, you know, stay tuned, Steve. You're going to see it ramp up, and you're going to get to see it in a segment. That's our plan. So I think it's going to really be quite visible and positive for us.
Very helpful. Thank you. Jump back in the queue.
Our next question is from Jacob Bout of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. See, so you're making the comment that capacity utilization was up in the quarter. And certainly volumes were up nicely, but margin was down. And just maybe talk a little bit about what was driving that. I would have thought with higher throughput, capacity utilization would have been higher. And then maybe as a follow-up here, you know, Canadian exports are up of lentils in general. Maybe just talk about the split of red versus green and processed versus unprocessed. Is there more stuff going out of Canada that's less processed?
I guess let's start with one thing. I guess the first part on your margin, Jacob, if we look at quarter one 12 versus quarter one 13, you know, our margins actually were improved. So, you know, I think that one of the things we have to recognize is the seasonality of the business is that, you know, you do typically see a quarter one margin profile that could be a little bit tighter because India is harvesting and Turkey is getting ready to harvest, you know, in the shipping period leading up. So importers are very cautious about pricing and, you know, when you are seeing demand, it's very cautious demand. Even with improved, you know, tonnage going out, I think that's one of the things that we always see in the quarter one period. So, you know, I think that what I took away from the quarter that I think is very positive is we saw strong demand, period. You know, we were able to boost our utilization on our processing segment up from, you know, low 50s to low 60s. And, you know, I think that what that allows us to see is it allows us to see the positive potential that as we continue to get into more traditional periods of demand, like the quarter three and quarter four periods, that, you know, if we see that demand fluidity and the regular seasonality of our business, then we'll be able to drive sales programs in the right direction.
This is Gaetan here. On the split of, you know, lentils in the first quarter, it was fairly even. Probably would have been about 180,000 ton of red lentils and the balance being green split over the three types, the large, medium, and small green. And then on the Q1 margins, I don't know, did you touch? I would say that that's probably a big part of it was the red shipping. I guess it's a large program for us. And with the cold weather through Jan, Feb, March, there was some rail fall downs. We had to use alternate means of transport to get our product to market. So that probably did make a good part of that difference.
Okay. Yeah, very good point. Actually, it's not something that we really talked about a lot, but many of you who are following the ag sector saw, you know, trains buried in snow in Saskatchewan, and I think this is one of our top 10 snowfalls in the meteorological history. So, you know, certainly those kinds of things affected a bit of the ability to get product into market in a timely fashion. I think in general, as I keep saying, I'm encouraged by the fact that demand is coming back. Part of the strength of AGT is our ability in a normalized demand scenario to pick our spots to originate and market into margin opportunities. When there are no demand, you know, catalysts and no demand regularity, it's very difficult to produce margins. So I think from that side of things, we're quite encouraged.
And then as far as that question about the processed versus the unprocessed?
Yeah, I mean, the processed versus unprocessed. Listen, there's unprocessed bulk vessel shipment that's going. You know, the target of that will only be two main markets, India and I think Turkey had how many vessels? One vessel or something?
A couple, yeah.
One or two.
It's very, very similar to last year at this time, lentils from Canada, in between that 150 to 160 range, August to April.
Is the unprocessed.
Yeah, now that's the majority then processed, yeah. Would be in the bulk vessels.
Yeah, so we're not seeing any major shift, Jacob. It's remember, we compete with the unprocessed bulk vessel shippers. They take it into large importers who then have to bag it, put it in the warehouse, and then put it into smaller buyers. We go directly to those buyers. So we're not seeing any major shift in terms of overall composition.
Your next question is from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. My question was basically answered, but just to get maybe a little bit more color, it was around this idea that the volumes, you had a monster quarter in terms of volumes, but you really didn't see a lift in margin sequentially. So, Gaetan, in terms of the weather-related impact of some of those logistics issues on margin, are we talking like $5 a ton, $10 a ton? I'm just trying to get a sense of how much of that was weather.
It would be close to $10 a ton for that period.
That
on
particular
the
issue?
Red program, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not an immaterial impact, Mark, but, you know, once again, it's the business, and, you know, when I look at it, you know, again, I don't want everyone to think I'm being overly optimistic, but it's quarter one, and it's an improvement over quarter one of 12. We're optimistic on our ability to lift margins in 2013 over what we saw in 2012. Now, if we can lift margins in general quarter over quarter, and demand catalysts provide the ability to increase our utilization, we have a much better result in 13 than we did in 12. So when I look at things today, those that are following the company quarter after quarter will see that things are playing out as we suggested. We've saw now, you know, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, quarter one, four consecutive quarters of improvements, and quarter two is a seasonally, you know, weaker quarter, which is normal in this business, but we're foreshadowing, you know, strong fall periods. So we're quite happy with the position that we're seeing today.
The next question is from John Chu of AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. So just maybe following up on the demand that you're forecasting for this fall, how important is India to that equation then? And I guess when do we start to really get that first sign? Is it really come the harvest and we'll start to get a sign of that, or are there other signs that we can point to over the next as the months come by to give ourselves a better sense that that's starting to really pick up?
Well, you know, the issue, John, for you as an analyst is that the statistics do lag a little bit, but you know, I think that you know, the one thing that we take away is the strong export performance in Jan, Feb, March, you know, really does, you know, give some support to the hypothesis that India did have quite a poor, you know, spring condition. And so demand continued through a period where, you know, in traditional years, if India has a normalized crop, we don't ship anything to India in February, March, April. So it's a market that would go silent because they would only consume their own local crop. So, you know, I think that we've got to watch the next events that we see are you know, the quarter two period. You know, we saw, you know, continued strength in the early part of the quarter. We usually see a bit of weakness towards the end of that quarter. But I think we're going to see a post-Ramadan restock in August and then into our new crop in September and beyond. So India is a big part of it, but the rest of the world will also, you know, kick in some market strength along with India, I think.
The next question is from Christine Healy of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Just changing gears a bit, I wanted to ask you about competition. Murad, I know that Viterra was a main competitor of yours on lentils and some other specialty crops in both Canada and South Australia. I know it hasn't been long, but have you guys seen any changes to date with Glencore taking over the helm, or does your team expect any? Do you think that Glencore could exit the business similar to other large players?
Well, I think, Christine, at this point, it's still really early to tell. I think that there's a lot of transition in the Glencore strategy, you know, going on around. And we just saw the completion of the asset transfer to Richardson on the Canadian platform here, you know, within the last month or 6 weeks. So, you know, we expect, you know, as we see, you know, Glencore around the world focusing very strongly on, you know, large bulk commodities and, you know, cereals and oil seeds and those types of commodities were, in my opinion, certainly a driver of the acquisition. It certainly wasn't peas and lentils that drove the acquisition of Viterra of a very successful company like Glencore. So, you know, we expect the bulk shipping program in pulses to continue to complement their bulk programs elsewhere. We don't anticipate it becoming a focus of any of the bulk players because the volume isn't there compared to the commodities of corn, soybeans, cereals, oil seeds. You know, that's what these companies are all about. It's bulk conventional shipments. I always remind people, you know, their success is based on 50,000-ton Panamax. Our success is based on 20-ton processed containers guaranteeing the maximum percentage of cracked seed coats to a European bean processor to guarantee the viscosity of their beans. Very different business.
The next question is from Anoop Prihar. Please go ahead. Oh, of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Just a question on the receivables balance and the inventory balance. I know when we spoke about this exact issue on the Q4 conference call, you had indicated that the inventory and receivable levels were higher than they had been typically just because you had a bunch of sales that were sitting there waiting to be booked and that we should see those numbers drop sequentially as we move into Q1. Now, that hasn't happened, and I'm wondering why that is the case.
I think, Anoop, there's two factors. One is price has escalated quite dramatically in the first quarter. So, you know, overall revenues and size of inventory and receivables were affected at QN snapshot. And, you know, we have to remember we are snapshotting a March 31st. So, you know, when we look at a very heavy shipping period in mid-Feb to end of March, you know, of course, the receivables and inventory levels to meet the shipment programs that we had in place and even spreading into the quarter two period, you know, they were evident on the balance sheet. I think one of the things to focus on, Anoop, is the significance of the days inventory and the days receivable outstanding. I mean, the reduction we reported in quarter one on a Q4 measurement and a Q1 2012 measurement, we're talking about, I think, what's the number, Lori, 30 days combined improvement in those two metrics. You know, that is a very significant improvement that will rear its head in terms of results in the coming quarters. So when we see the seasonality of the business returning to normal, we expect balance sheet to lever and delever as the seasonality of the business shows itself in any cycle in an annual period. And so what I can tell you that, you know, when Gaetan and I look at the metrics that we put in place for our country operations, we are ahead of target and ahead of schedule, and we won't take our eye off of that particular metric. So, you know, you will see that translate into lower levels. We're expecting to see that in the coming periods.
As a reminder, for anyone who wishes to ask a question, you may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset and before pressing any keys. The next question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Steve, are you there?
It seems Steve dropped. Should I continue with the next question? And Steve, if you can re-queue. Steve Hansen.
Okay, let's take the next one.
Okay, the next question is from Robert Winslow of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, Murad. Can you hear me?
Yes, Robert, I can.
Great, great. So I just wanted to follow up on, I guess, two questions ago, talking about opportunities in the bulk side. And you mentioned that, you know, whether it's wheat, cereals, corn, what have you, that's the big bulk players. It's a very different business. But also in your MD&A, you talk about assessing various asset utilization alternatives, and one of those is, in particular, expansion into beans, cereal grains, and oilseeds. So maybe you could just walk us through what your competitive advantage would be, given, as you say, that is a very different business. Thank you.
Yeah, I think a very good point, Robert. We're looking at specific niche opportunities in cereals. So when we look in particular at Malaysia, Thailand, the Philippines, Indonesia, we look at the opportunity. In particular right now, our cereal grains platform is aimed at utilization of our Australian asset base. So we have regular millers of wheat that are looking for guaranteed protein wheat opportunities in containers. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, some of our snack food manufacturing companies are also involved in wheat milling. And so we see them as an opportunity to put, you know, 100 container blocks of product to utilize underutilized South Australian and New South Wales assets, you know, in particular into that. We're seeing the same thing on the oil seed side of containerized shipments out of Russia, Ukraine, and also out of our Australian platform for both canola, flaxseed, sorghum is another one where we see the containerized sorghum trade as another opportunity. So when we look at these, you know, again, we're not looking at bulk vessel quantities. We're looking at 1,000 to 3,000 ton, you know, regular scale buyers. And these buyers are always buyers of other products from us. So they would buy fava beans, broad beans, green peas, you know, and part of this cross-selling strategy, Robert, is utilization of underutilized assets, cross-selling into the same distribution platform, taking more of their dollars on the liquid, safe buyers in the world. We like that ability to boost our revenue per customer, you know, over time.
The next question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, guys. Sorry about that earlier. You know, I understand that volume is a key component to ramping utilization and hopefully, you know, bolstering margin over time. But your commentary does seem to suggest that tightening supply fundamentals and in particular, commodity pricing is an important aspect to this margin enhancement effort now as well. And I'm just wondering how important that pricing aspect of the commodities really is from your merchandising perspective.
Well, Steve, don't misunderstand. I mean, we're not talking about we're turning our inventory, you know, to a point where, you know, depending on the platform, you know, if I look at my day's inventory outstanding, you know, a lot of the inventory outstanding would be in places like my pasta business, you know, the durum wheat and the pasta that we have to keep for, you know, retail programs in the Turkish domestic market and others. So we're not looking at price appreciation that's, you know, benefiting us on a margin improvement basis just from the raw commodity price escalation. What we see is commodity price escalation provides importer fundamentals to drive their purchasing and demand decisions. It also, I got to tell you, it allows us to skim the best market opportunities in each market. So when a market is going up, we're able to, because we're the originator, we're not the trader of the commodity. You know, I can tell you, if the Leno price is going up in a country, we're advising, or in the country, in Canada, let's say, we're advising our importers to buy. And so we're able to, you know, generate margin in an escalating environment by picking our spots and picking our product mix and picking our opportunity. You know, when you've got a deflated market where you're basically pushing uphill every day like we did over the last, say, 18 months, late in 11 and early in 12, you know, it's difficult to generate margin because you're just trying to keep assets busy, whatever you can do. So I think it's important to note, don't mistake my comments, you know, positive demand catalysts and price fundamentals provide the enabling environment for us to improve margins. That's the environment in which AGT has flourished in the past. That's what I think we're going to be able to show later in 13 and 14.
The next question is from John Chu of AltaCorp Securities. Please go ahead. Oh, AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, maybe just following up on Steve's last question there. Maybe can you? Is it possible to rank how you expect some of the key drivers to help improve your margins per ton going forward? So, obviously, increasing asset utilization, product mix, and even rising prices would all be factors. But for your assessment of seeing margins per ton improving in 2013 and 2014, how would you rank those contributing factors?
Number one, demand catalysts. We want fluidity of demand. We want, you know, normalized seasonal flows going into markets. You know, part of the strength of AGT has always been the fact that we are geographically diversified in both origins and markets, and we're able to arbitrage in normal demand conditions. You know, I think that that's, you know, a really big part of it. I think that the other, you know, big side of this margin improvement, number two, product mix. We believe that the Pulse ingredient platform will provide over the coming periods a meaningful ability to boost our average margin per ton across our platform globally. And, you know, we like the upstream nature of the ingredient market. We like the nature of the business being, you know, more of a different macroeconomic profile, John, than the traditional Pulse business. So, you know, I can tell you that you know, a pet food manufacturing company in New Jersey is not affected by the same macroeconomic effect of currency volatility of the rupee in India. We like that. So I think that, you know, those are the two main things, demand catalysts and product mix. Number three is utilization. You know, when we get back to our target of 67% utilization with a program in 14 and beyond 3% boost of utilization annually, with the high fixed cost component nature of our business, it'll be a meaningful margin or meaningful earnings improvement over the course of a five-year cycle.
The next question is from Robert Winslow of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Murad, I just wanted to follow up on the earlier question about the transportation issues that cropped up due to the weather in Q1. Was there a deferral? Are we going to see some catch-up of that? In other words, get some of those costs back and tons back here in Q2? Have you seen that already?
Well, I think that there's two things. Listen, there's part of them, Robert, you just end up losing spots, right? These are... Yep. Spots that you don't get back. So when you miss a rail spot, some of it, you know, you may find you'll fill in. But I can tell you that if we look at our Canadian platform, you know, there's two things that I don't think we've made clear enough that I better mention. Margins overall improved quarter one versus quarter one of 12. But when I look at margins overall for Canada and Turkey in quarter one, we saw an improvement even over quarter four. So, you know, this is a very positive sign because the Canadian and Turkish platforms, being our largest platforms, where the underutilized asset base and margins were constrained as a result of the size of those platforms. So when you have an asset base that's well utilized, you may lose those spots and you won't see a catch up.
Right, okay.
When we look at what we saw, though, later in March, you know, on rails drops and things like that, listen, we did see an ability to carry over some of those tons into April. And, you know, the quarter has followed a normal seasonal pattern, which is, you know, we're usually busy in the first half or two-thirds of the quarter. Then we'll see a bit of a lull, which is a predictable lull because India's harvested, even if it's bad, they still consume what they harvested, right? Turkey then comes into their harvest May, June. That's a very normalized period where the North Africa market will truly, you know, freeze for a period to assess turkey and then keep rolling. So we're expecting with Ramadan to be, you know, over in late July, we expect a replenishment demand coming in July, August, leading into our new crop in September. And we're optimistic we'll be able to try and pick up a bit of that.
The next question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Sorry, guys. I'm having issues with getting cut off here. Just a last one, if I may. Can you speak to your efforts to secure some additional strategic partners or customers on the pulse ingredient size side of things, sort of as you speak to the global market opportunities beyond just Cargill?
Well, Steve, I can tell you that, you know, because things are running along well enough now, I'm dedicating a lot of my own personal effort with, you know, the team that Gaytan has built with the country managers and things. You know, the traditional pulses business, we're expecting it to continue to improve. The pulse ingredient initiative, you know, is one that we're putting significant management effort, you know, into developing additional strategic partnerships and sales opportunities. And, you know, part of this is that although we're only talking about it with a lot of vigor over the last few quarters, you know, this is an initiative that has been in the works for over 4 years. You know, looking at the R&D side, you know, the building of the factory, recruitment of the scientific team, building of the science product development, ingredient development center in Saskatoon, you know, which some of you analysts, I think, are going to have a chance to see that in the coming months. Some of you have requested to come and see. It's really something to see, actually, to be able to see the development of the different, you know, products that we have in the development on a business-to-business strategy. You know, we're developing ingredient products that have widespread application in food, pet food, branded feed, aquaculture, and industrial uses. So, you know, I think that there'll be a combination. You know, we may see additional strategic partnerships like the Cargill. But, you know, many of these agreements are going to be closed-loop, you know, confidential contracts that companies are going to sign. A lot of these aren't one-offs. This is what we also like about the ingredient business, is that once you secure a ingredient solution into a branded product, it becomes a long-term supply contract. We like that. We think it's a very different business than the spot nature, the macroeconomic affected nature of the current global pulse business. Now, also, don't take our comments the wrong way. We're not going to give up on our current business because it's making us money. It will improve. But this new business is one that, you know, we see a lot of potential. So North America and Western Europe are the big focuses. We'll also see a bit of focus in Southeast Asia, but Canada, U.S. in particular. And then the European side on the gluten-free, non-GMO, that's a big push in Europe.
The next question is from Christine Healy of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the follow-up. Murad, you talked last quarter about AGT supplying much more product to UN Food Aid this year. It's lower margin, but it's good volumes and good payment terms. Can you tell us roughly how much volume that was this quarter and when those volumes are expected to fall off?
You know what, Christine, I don't have an exact figure, but I can tell you that in the trading and distribution platform, mm-hmm. you know, we did have, you know, some pretty significant volumes. It was big part of the jump. And when you see, you know, of course, the geographic proximity of the Arbel Group compound in Mersin, Turkey, to the United Nations refugee camps that are located on the inside of the Turkish border, you know, we have that regular program ongoing. To be honest, Christine, we don't anticipate these volumes necessarily tailing off until 2014. We expect it'll be a good, you know, incremental, you know, 14-day payment kind of business that we like to augment our earnings as we go forward. You know, this is all part of the catch-up of the 11 and 12 disruptions caused by Arab Spring and the political unrest, we're seeing continued contracting programs in Algeria, Egypt, Libya, Syria, Iraq, you know, Iran. We're seeing all of these governmental programs, Kuwait, also continuing. And, you know, we like the profile of those. So, you know, some are lower margin, some are okay. So we're seeing pasta, you know, also being part of the tenders, lentils, rice, and those.
Our final question is from Robert Winslow of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, sorry again. Question three. Murad, can you tell us, please, Cargill, your relationship with Cargill, do they have any restrictions or covenants for your balance sheet? What I'm getting at is, do they put some kind of limitations on you? They want to keep your balance sheet at a certain level for their comfort? Is that something that you can talk about, or maybe there is no such restriction?
Well, I can tell you, Robert, first of all, there is none. But I can tell you, with $434 million of current assets that are EDC insured and that our inventory that is booked to physical reconciled every month, I don't think there's anyone except maybe our analysts and a few of our investors that are looking at debt levels and not considering the cash conversion nature of our current assets. So the answer is no, there's nothing like that. And frankly, when I look at the rebalancing of our net working capital position, you know, we have a balance sheet that I think in our industry is the envy of our competitors. So I'm pretty comfortable that the working capital initiatives, you know, are going to lead to absolute debt reductions over time. But, you know, in order to do our business, we must acquire pulses, we must process them, we must ship them to a client, we must use our risk management program to protect our payment risks, and we must convert it to cash and start the cycle over again. That's the business that we're in. And the syndicate and the senior notes offering took our short-term credits, converted them to long-term, provided us with our interest rate certainty, and I will tell you that our prediction is very strong. This financing will become a major competitive advantage for AGT in the coming two-year cycle because our competitors are largely globally family undercapitalized companies that will not have access to a balance sheet like ours. So, you know, I think I'm very comfortable representing to Cargill and to every major food company in the world that we are financially in a very strong position to be a long-term supplier for them.
That's helpful. Thanks.
And that brings us to the end of our questions in the session. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on the call today. I'd like to remind everyone that's still on the call, if you have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. Again, thanks for attending our conference call, and I'd like to wish everyone a good day.